Subcommittee on General Government in session, and we are currently on the Department of Administrative Services budget, Senate Bill 5502, and do you have any comments for us this morning, Dallas?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we'll continue with the recommendations I prepared for you last week. Also at your seats, or at your places, there's a memo dated the 23rd of February. It should be underneath your agenda with two additional technical adjustments to lottery funds. I'll go over those at the tail end. And also, you have in front of you, just for reference purposes, a copy of House Bill 5006, which is the capital construction bill, because one of our recommendations deals with capital construction and amendment to this bill. Although we discuss the department's capital construction here, we make a recommendation to the co-chairs with respect to the capital construction bill budget. With that, Mr. Chair, you're scheduled, I believe, work session we have tentatively scheduled through tomorrow. The chair has told me he would like us to post also through Wednesday in case it takes more time. So the Secretary of State will be notified we'll begin work on the Secretary of State's budget then Thursday instead of Wednesday. Okay. If you remember, we left off with we finished the State Services Division of my memo dated, I believe it was the 20th, and so I'm now on page 3 with the Enterprise Information Strategy and Policy Division, which in the works, the LFO analyst recommended work session document, shows our adjustment on page 9 of 32. Our recommendation with respect to this division is to approve the budget request with the exception of a policy option package number 5454. Excuse me. This is the start of a proposed Oregon GIS utility to be dubbed or named Navigator. Our recommendation is not to approve this is for a couple of reasons. One is that state share of this cost is tabulated right now, expected to be about $30 million over the next 6 years. There are blow-up costs. It's projected cost another $10 million next biennium and $15 the following. The total tab of $180 million, the balance of $150 million is supposed to come from federal and other private sector sources. Those haven't been firmed up to our knowledge. We think it's a little, with the other issues in front of this committee, with the there are some rather large investments in information technology proposed already. I think you've heard of the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network with a price tag in excess of $600 million. The Judicial Department also has a request with a total price tag estimated to be in excess of $100 million for significant IT infrastructure. We still have the consolidation of the data center yet to complete. Given those things, we are recommending taking this one off the plate, dealing with the other ones first, and then also we believe that there are existing, we don't believe, we know there are existing GIS, geophysical, geospatial information systems developed and being developed and maintained in various state agencies. We don't really have a good handle yet on what those are, what they can do, and the why and why not. They may not be able to be accessed and utilized by other state agencies. I think before we march down the path of a significant investment of $180 million, it would behoove the executive branch and the legislature, I think, to get a firm handle on what exists in state agencies right now, so to clearly understand what we have, what might be done to better access those and have them be accessible by various other state agencies and maybe the general public what it might take, the whys and why nots for them not being able to be used by each other. So that's the reason for this recommendation.
Dallas, excuse me, Senator Johnson.
Go ahead and ask your question, sir.
I was just asking you if, or going to ask you, Dallas, if this is a case where in the legislative fiscal's opinion then, there has been really what I would call insufficient planning and coordination around this whole topic to jump in and spend a whole lot of money.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe that the executive branch has done its planning and looked at this, but from that perspective only, I believe it hasn't. It needs to bring
coordination, then, is the...
Yeah, with the legislature and maybe bringing the other agencies into the fold. It looks to be we have Department of Transportation has a GIS utility. We know that the Department of Revenue, and you'll see it when we go down there and visit us, working with counties on what's called ORMAP for yep. tax lots and the like. Before moving down, I think they've done some planning, but it's kind of without an understanding, at least on our part, of why these pieces can't talk to each other.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. I appreciate LFO's analysis of this, and I guess my question is, if we don't go forward with the package, but we charge the agency with doing this coordinating function, do we leave them enough money and enough people to do that? Because I think this is a very valuable project, but I've raised the question of duplication and failure to coordinate and failure to communicate over and over and over again. I have a great deal of confidence in Director Ball's ability to step back and plan, and I would cite Scenic as Exhibit A for that. I want to make sure that if we're charging them with the task of doing this coordination, that we leave them ample nimbleness to do so. I don't want to charge them with the responsibility and then strip away the money and the people and be surprised that there's not coordination. And I can see ready to pounce down.
No.
I just want to leave them adequate planning flexibility.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we can ask the agency to respond to that. I can certainly tell you this $5 million, there's no bodies in this. Money, or there were just a few, I think, but they have three or four. They have a GIS person. There's an assessment, I believe, of agencies for GIS, and we can ask the department if they think that what they have in the existing budget would be sufficient.
Mr. Chair, I would welcome that because I'm about to pile on with one other thing. I know there's a controversy right now. Dogami's budget, the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries has asked for, I think, $4 million for LIDAR, which is a wonderful technique to map the coast and to inform us about all sorts of things that could go into wave energy development and tsunami hazard and all that sort of stuff. But again, it seems as though we have a proliferation of technology with not a lot of touch points. And last but not least, some agreement has to be negotiated with the counties in order to get some of this data, because the counties have thrown up the block of saying it's proprietary information, when I think really what they are saying is it's proprietary information that we charge for. And if we're going to have a state system with complete functionality, I think we've got to be able to count on our partners to provide necessary data so that we don't have these giant gaps in data that I think would ultimately make the whole program not as efficacious as it could be were there a high level of cooperation. And I'm certainly not making the case, and this has been, I've been badgered about this, I'm not making the case to make police officers' home addresses available to anybody that wants to look at it. But I am making a case that if we're going to have a functional system, we've got to have basic data from our partners, the counties.
Do you want to hear from Dennis?
I'd love to.
Mr. Chair, while they're coming up.
Representative Byer, yes.
I guess my question would be, is there anything in the way of these people talking? I mean, is there anything we would need to do? Because it doesn't sound like they are right now. And is there anything in that realm we need to...
Senator Johnson.
My observation in response to your remark would be to have somebody tasked with doing that, or somebody shop tasked with doing that, and I think you're looking at it.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, my name is Lindsey Ball. I'm the director of the Department of Administrative Services. Chair Jensen, Representative Beyer, you asked if there was anything that would prohibit us from talking to one another. No, there isn't. We're working.
Talking, sorry, Mr. Chair, was not exactly what I had in mind, but well, working together more than talking.
Well, let me explain.
Okay.
One of the things that we've done in the last year is there's a group that has come together between Cy Smith in my agency and the counties who have the bulk of the information. They have formed a group, and what they are doing is they are moving around the state talking to all of the counties, or trying to talk to all the counties, to come up with some plans as to how they can structure a system to where that information can be put into a repository so that we can use it across the board for the good of Oregon. That part is in place. Is there need for more planning? Yes, there can be some more planning behind this. I'm not going to disagree with that at all. We felt that with the request in the budget by the governor and his recommendation was that $5 million would be part of that planning exercise. We can certainly, without any problem, roll that back to a point where we can conduct the planning, bring you the full plan, and then present it to the legislature and ask for a funding of a project rather than a planning and project combination. I don't have a problem with that at all. But I must say, Chair, I do agree with Senator Johnson. Without some funding mechanism to have someone task the planning effort specifically, it does become quite a burden.
Any follow-up, Senator?
Well, I'm perfectly fine with setting aside, with agreeing with the LFO analysis of this, but I would like to have the record here lay down this committee's charge to DAS, and I'd like to give him, maybe you're not prepared to say right now exactly what you'd need in order to have this coordinating function, if it's one body, if it's a limited duration, if it's a full-time employee, how much money would need to go with it. I want to leave them with a clear charge that they need to accomplish this coordinating function, and I don't want to charge them with it and tie their hands.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, if you wanted a proposed plan as to how we would conduct the planning for the project, we can have that to you by noon.
That would be good, Lindsey, if you could do that.
We'll make sure that that's accomplished.
Okay.
Good. Cool.
Thank you. Alice?
Okay. We will work with Mr.
Right.
Ball and the department and get new numbers and a revised recommendation, if you will.
Good. Proceed then.
Okay. Next item, the Office of Health Policy and Research.
Let's skip that item.
Skip that one
until
Thank you,
is here. That, no, that's fine.
We will do that. My pleasure, Mr. Chair.
And for the members who are not aware of it, there's arising some concern or controversy. I think there was some panic over something which I think may have been completely unfounded, but then that's my interpretation of the world, not how others might see it. So we'll just hold that. Dr. Bates, I know, has a very keen interest in this area, Senator Bates, and would not want to talk about this unless he was here. And I did give him permission to not push himself by getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning to make our hearing on this today. Please, go on. Next item, then.
Sure. The Public Employees Benefit Board, we are essentially recommending approval of the budget request with its three policy option packages that provided some additional resources and staff for current workload.
Senator Whitson.
Could you give us the page numbers?
Page 3 of my memo, and I'm sorry, and then page 11 on this worksheet document.
Thank you.
My apologies. If you remember the packages that were presented, one of them would continue the efforts with its continued support of the website that the Public Employees Benefit Board maintains. It had been maintained by a three-quarter limited duration position. I agree with them, they need a full-time and make it permanent. We're supportive of that. There was also a package to provide a board support person and some consulting services for the board. The board is becoming increasingly challenging for the board to work with the medical providers, the insurers, and the medical community to provide contained cost or somewhat insurance for state employees at a cost that can be borne by the state and government. They also had a package to provide some additional expenditure limitation for the board in various efforts to help control health care costs, and we're supportive of that. None of these require any changes. No additional fees. This is the funds are available out of its 0.06% it charges on the proceeds from employer contributions. There is a policy option package to fund the Oregon Employment Benefits Board. That we are recommending taking it out. That is because funding for that activity was provided in Senate Bill 426, which passed Ways and Means Full on Friday. The money was placed in the DAS budget. There, it was other funds in that budget or in that bill. So we are recommending taking it out here. It's being replaced as other funds in another bill. Any questions?
What POP number?
That was POP 304, Policy Option Package 304, was to fund the Oregon Economic Benefits Board with almost $5 million of general fund. The Senate Bill 426 funds it as other funds with the Department of Administrative Services to come from the Department of Education. The Department of Education is tasked with paying for this. Now it will pay the Department of Administrative Services to administer it, and that is how it's being dealt with in that Senate Bill 426, which you will see.
Yep. So in essence, this issue has already been resolved.
That is correct, Mr. Chair. It was in Representative Delizio's subcommittee.
Right. Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Fellas, just some information for me. How much influence does the PEP Board have or should have on the cost curtailment in medical delivery costs, and specifically I'm thinking of direction in trying to establish deductibles and co-pays and price negotiation at the point of service delivery, medical liability, end-of-life planning, those sort of things, all those drivers that are critical in the cost of the medical insurance premiums. To what extent should the PEP Board be examining and making recommendations, and to what extent do they?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the board is fairly engaged in this activity. I mean, they are looking at what's the term? It escapes me now. Evidence-based medical practices to reward those that have proven to be more effective, either at a better cost. They are in, they have adjusted copays to incent people to use generic substitutes. They have a, they go through and do a list. They are the medical, they're trying to work with the medical community to, in different areas, to address issues such as differing approaches in medical care. I guess in some geographic areas, if you have a certain type of ailment, it's dealt with surgically versus some, in another area, the predominant form of treatment is something different. And they're actively trying to work on that. So I believe it's very proactive. They are, one of these policy option packages would enable them to pay some consulting fees to a doctor where they, additional expertise is needed. They have access to those people. They are quite proactive.
Thank you.
Did I mischaracterize their activities, Mr. Ball?
Nope.
Thank you. Good time to ask you. The next division is the facilities division. And we're recommending no change to this requested budget. We're recommending approval of it as it stands. They had a package 110 that would provide account pay for professional services associated with the sale of real property, be legal and appraisal and the like. Those monies or other funds that would come from the transactions themselves. There was a green power program option package of about $200,000 in there, which was being paid for out of uniform rent. There is a bill moving forward that biofuels would require agencies, buildings that to convert to biofuel. Something they estimated cost about $5,000 per building to adjust the, I believe, the heating or whatever it is. We feel that that could be part of this $200,000 if that bill passes and they can phase in that those adjustments or those mechanical adjustments. And then they had some phase-in of additional staff that would be paid for out of the state hospital replacement funds that would come through the Department of Human Services. Again, these are professional construction-type staff that would, everyone believes, everyone I say within LFO, both the analysts for the Department of Administrative Services and the analysts for the Department of Human Services, to have this sort of expertise on board as it's needed. And again, these are phased in and would be paid for out of those construction funds out of the Department of Human Services. So we are recommending no change to this budget. The next item are the capital improvements. Other funds are provided for capital improvements for existing uniform rent state buildings. We are recommending approval of this request. The uniform rent that's charged state agencies includes a component for these sorts of things so that office buildings are maintained at a satisfactory to certain standards that the department has adopted.
Senator Bates. Senator.
I know we bear a striking resemblance to each other. Are you going to go through the whole list of the capital improvements? I'm at the
These are the capital construction.
I'm at the disadvantage that the page that I have, somebody when they duplexed it, I only have 1, 3, 4, and 5. And so I just wanted to know, are you going to go through the list on page 5?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the capital construction.
Basically. Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't going to go through the list of the various capital improvements. They were things like some roof and some HVAC minor work. And
that was really one of the questions. The rooftop fall protection equipment installation, and this may, you know, asking you about this, Lindsay, without having, I mean, Director Ball, without having your manager here might be a little like, you know, calling the president of United Airlines to complain about a center seat. You may not know all the detail. But I'm just trying to figure out $250,000 for fall protection off of roofs. Can I get back to you on that? It just surprised me.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, I would have to defer that question in detail to Bill Foster or a member of his staff, but we can get that information to you.
That'd be great. I'm just curious. I'm trying to figure out how many unsmart people are wandering around on the top of state buildings where they would fall off. And I'm assuming those are professional guys that know what they're doing, and I'm just trying to figure out why we have that expenditure.
We'll get that answer to you.
Okay. That's the height of micromanagement, by the way.
I'll move into capital construction now, if you like.
That'd be fine.
The capital construction bill you have in front of you is House Bill 5006, as was prepared. What we will be recommending are some changes to the Department of Administrative Services component of that, which are contained on lines 17 through 28 on page 1 and lines 1 through 7 on page 2 of this bill. Let me just go over my recommended changes. The first is to reduce the red lot building structure to a placeholder. This is the construction. To a placeholder of $1. There's planning money in here and construction money. The planning yet hasn't been done, so they haven't got a firmed up number. But the red lot is the one, I believe, across from the Department of Revenue. Is that correct? Off of Capitol, yeah. Across east of Capitol Street, the east side of Capitol Street, in between Marion and Center, I'm thinking. Yep. And
I think that's correct.
Thank you. And it's not right on the mall, but very close to the mall. They were planning to build a small or limited amount of office space and a parking structure there. We're saying, okay, do the planning first, but do it in conjunction with planning for the additional building that's being planned for the mall. Long-range plan for the mall was to place a building at the north end of the mall itself, the park, right across the street between Center and Marion again, bounded by Summer and Winter Streets. It's currently a dirt lot called the Yellow Lot. And we are proposing to add $1 of placeholder limitation for that building, and because there's planning money here also. We're encouraging the planning. We've had discussions with the Treasurer of State on office space needs. You're, I think, aware of the potential plans in this building. The office, it needs to be planned in concert with each other. And so we are recommending adding $1 placeholder for the Capitol Mall building, which isn't included on this list, and maintain the planning money for the Capitol Mall building. We're recommending removal of the $1.7 million for HVAC Justice Building renovation phase 3. That's because the emergency board took care of it already. This money got moved up when the air conditioning died in that building for about the third time or second time in 2 years. And it's prohibitively costly to build the replacement parts. They were going to replace it anyway, and that is being done right now before summer, so that money is not needed. So those were the changes we were recommending. We are also recommending one additional change, which will probably lead to some discussion, of adding $4.1 million to this bill for renovation of the Eugene State Office Building. There is a request to the co-chairs for money, a supplemental funding for 05-07 to begin that work on renovation of the Eugene State Office Building. It will need money in 07-09, and we're recommending then the $1.4 million be in there. For that renovation. As you know, Legislative Fiscal Office has been supportive of that renovation.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. With your permission, Mr. Chair, I'd like to address a question to Mr. Ball about the Eugene office building. Has there been new information recently with respect to anything about that. I think that there at one time was a discussion of a county-state partnership, and that hadn't gone very far. And I had learned from a colleague that there might have been some new news recently, and perhaps that's not the case. I just was going to query you.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, what has taken place from the time that we had our initial hearings on Capitol construction in the Eugene State Office Building? Lane County delivered a proposal to some legislators and to Facilities Division at Department of Administrative Services that would cap our cost of the new building that they proposed to build at $5 million, which was our original request. Completion of the building is approximately 3 years out. There was no conclusion in that $5 million for the $1 million in transferring the phone switch that we'd have to do. So the cost to the state would be $6 million. Now, how that works is Department of Environmental Quality needs to move out of their current location prior to the 3 years. So they would have to relocate, and we still wouldn't be able to provide office space for them, who would be the currently proposed anchor tenant. And so that proposal does not work well for the state of Oregon at this time.
I guess the point that I am trying to make, Mr. Chair, is that the concept has been thoroughly vetted, I believe, and I just want to lay down a record that says that Mr. Ball has made every attempt to try to make this work. There's a lengthy record of negotiation back and forth. I didn't know if there was a new proposal that had any possibility of meeting everyone's needs. It sounds like there isn't. But my concern was just to demonstrate that every effort had been made by the state to try to be accommodating, and it just apparently isn't going to work.
I haven't seen where it would. At this point, Senator Johnson, I have not seen where it's going to be beneficial to the state of Oregon without more cost associated with it. If the decision is made that we spend more money, I'm fine with that. That's a policy position that I'm not authorized to make. I'm looking at the fiscal side of this, and what's going to benefit the state of Oregon, and it's the $4.1 million renovation is how it works out for me. If there can be some type of a partnership agreed to with the county and the city, I'm all for partnerships. I don't have a problem with that. I just haven't been able to get to there yet.
Thank you.
Senator, I represent Byer.
Thank you. I really became aware of this probably last fall. Early winter, late fall. So if you could remind me of when this all started, at what point was the proposal made to do the repairs to the building, and at maybe what point the county came in wanting to do something different?
Chair Jensen, Representative Byer, I don't have the chronological order of events in front of me, but let me give you some approximate dates.
Before you begin, could I ask that maybe you get us that? I believe you have it, don't you?
Chair Jensen, I do have a chronological order of events.
For the meeting tomorrow, I don't think we'll get to work session or into voting this out, you know, sort of thing. But if you could have that, I would appreciate it.
I will bring it.
Respond to.
Well, and I mean, I can wait if that's.
We're talking about it now. Okay. Let's talk about
right.
it.
Initial negotiations, interest by the county in the building was made known to the state in 1980. As time moved forward, in the mid 90s, there was more discussion about what we should do as a state with respect to the Eugene State Office Building: sell it, renovate it, etc. As that discussion took place, a request was made by the county for us to give the building to the county. We declined that, of course. We continued to look for ways that we could partner with the county and the city on the building. Up to continuing negotiations with the county on the purchase of the building. But that was not something that the county wanted to pursue. So then we looked at other options, selling the building to other parties who at that point did not show an interest in it. We then came to the conclusion after a study was done by an engineering firm on the building that it would be most cost effective for the state to renovate the building at $4.1 million and continue to use the building for state office space. That's when we came forward in September, e-board of September of 06, requesting the $4.1 million. The county came in at the last minute again wanting to partner, so I requested that the e-board request be pulled so that we could negotiate with the county. We offered a limit of expenditures for the state of Oregon at $5 million. I said, for a new building, we'll see if we can go another $1 million over and above the $4.1 million as terms of trying to negotiate a deal. They came back in with a request to the state of $7.5 million, which you add another $1 million for the switch, that's $8.5 million. And so consequently, what occurs is we're going to spend twice as much money for the building. That's when I said I wasn't comfortable moving forward with that. We brought it back to the December e-board for a request of $4.1 million, and legislative leadership at that time pulled it from the agenda and said to come back during the full session. So here we are today. Next negotiation that came in from the county was $5 million cap. We still have the $1 million phone switch issue and a three-year construction date, which extends beyond the time that DEQ's extends beyond when DEQ's deadline expires in their current lease. That kind of gives you a rough scenario, but I can supply that information.
I think it'd be handy for everybody to have it, regardless of what happens.
And possibly Chair Jensen, at that same time, I can share with the committee some of the pros and cons of the current proposal that the county came forth with.
I'm not sure that we don't want to pursue that a little more. I don't know that we need that.
Okay.
But before you begin, yes, Representative Edwards.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Lindsay or Mr. Ball, I've been led to believe that in talking with the county, when I first heard about this, because the first time I heard about this was about a month ago, I've been led to believe that the 4.1 for renovating that building, I mean, the county is essentially claiming that, look, that building is not renovatable. It's so decrepit and it's in such bad shape. I haven't toured the building myself. I don't know what's involved with, what you get for the 4.1 of the renovation. I'm not here to advocate that the state should be handing out candy to every county and city that they can. I think that we are charged with spending our state resources wisely. But I was wondering if you could speak to what you have an engineering firm has come in and said has made the recommendation of renovating for 4.1. What's the reasoning behind that instead of building new or selling it to the county if the state doesn't want it?
Chair Jensen, Representative Edwards, the private firm that was contracted to take a look at the building and the condition of it to see whether or not it was feasible for renovation or if it was just a total loss, determined that it was much cheaper to renovate the building, put the seismic upgrades in it, the new wiring system, plumbing system, HVAC system, bring the insulation in the building up to where it needs to be, and it would be a cost of about, as I recall, and I don't have the figures in front of me, but as I recall, it's almost twice as much to tear the building down and rebuild. And I'd have to look at that again for the same square footage. But we have that information. Now, I too have continually heard from the county that it's a decrepit building and it's an eyesore, et cetera. But that's also why we have proposed to renovate the building. And once again, if we want to demo the building, demolish it, build from the ground up, it's going to be more expensive. And it certainly will be more expensive to build the building that the county has proposed in their proposal.
Follow up. Thank you. So you're saying that, because I know some of the county's concerns were some of the items that you mentioned, seismic, energy, et cetera. Are there other reasons from your perspective that you've been presented with, like functionality or anything like that, configuration of the building, that the county has told you are good reasons to do something else, start over with the building rather than renovate? Because what I'm hearing you say is that the renovation addresses some of the issues that the county has with it, but I'm wondering if there are other things beyond that you guys have talked about. You guys being DAS and Lane County.
Chair Jensen, Representative Edwards, I don't recall the county ever coming forth with information that talks about the building itself. You know, why it needs to be torn down and not renovated, other than it's a decrepit building. I haven't seen anything from them that counters what the engineering firm delivered to us. I don't think the county has had a private independent study of the building such as we have done. Maybe they have, unbeknownst to me. What I have heard from the county is it's a prime location across the street from the courthouse. They want to have access to the courthouse. They need the space. And they want either, what has been communicated to us is we either give them the building and the property, or we be a partner in building a new building. Because they certainly have not shown an interest in the state renovating the building that we currently have.
Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. Mr. Ball, do you have any information on the potential difference in appraised value of the building renovated or replaced?
Chair Jensen, I don't, and Senator Whitson, I don't have that information with me currently, other than what was initially reported to us as being cost effective for the state to renovate the building by the private firm. To renovate the building rather than tear down and build a new one, it would be cheaper to renovate and utilize the building we currently have.
I think I understand that, but I was looking at what would be the value of the building at the end of the day. I mean, after it's been 4.1 remodeling it, or about 8 to build a new one, take it down and build a new one, what would be the value of the building then from the standpoint of the appraised value? Would they be similar in value then, or would the new building be worth a lot more if you were to sell it on the open market?
Chair Jensen, Senator Whitsitt, I can't tell you what the value would be. I don't know that I have an appraisal figure. There could be something in facilities division that I'm not aware of. I just haven't seen it, or I'm not aware of it.
Other questions? In terms of the renovation, certainly one of the things the county would be concerned about or interested in would be the one up, Senator, would be the aesthetics of the building. And I don't know, I may have seen the building. I don't know that I ever have. I wouldn't know if I saw a picture, of it. But I do think the county would be concerned about the aesthetics of the building. And in the renovation, is that an item that is being considered? Or are we talking about a nice functional building on the inside, but a decrepit looking building on the outside?
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, it would have all the outward appearance of a business office type building. Now, please understand, there I think from what I've been told, and I understand this to be true, there are architectural designs that are preferred by the city of Eugene in the inner core that might be more extravagant than what you would typically see in a average state office building. This would have the appearance of an average business state office building.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
just a quick follow-up on that. When you say the appearance of an average office building, I guess what I want to know is it going to be the same? Is it going to look the same as it does now? Because it is an average office building now, and are you changing that?
Chair Jensen, Representative Beyer, there's not going to be a lot of change in the architectural design of the building.
Are there questions? Did you, Senator, want to weigh in on this one? No? Okay.
Well, thank you.
Another. All right.
Unless it's in Springfield.
Oh, you'd like to move it to Springfield? Do you have a free lot for us over there?
We could probably give you a good deal.
Eugene is known as the gateway to Gateway, so we'll take it.
Oh, okay. I can tell we have too many folk from that have been overly biased one way or another by the duck fever that seems to be spreading throughout that part of the
Mr. Chair.
State.
I have one other quick question, which is not necessarily, I mean, in a way it's related, but do you have any idea how many of these, do we have any other buildings in the state that are owned by by counties, state, city? Do you have any idea of how many there might be out there?
Chair Jensen, Representative Beyer, I cannot tell you how many partnerships we have in the way of ownership of office buildings and space. It is something that can be done. It's not a routine practice.
Follow up. But it has been done, and so there are some.
Chair Jensen, Representative Beyer, I can't think of one off the top of my head, but I'm sure there probably is somewhere around the state. Again, I'd have to defer that to staff in facilities to look at some of the contracts that we have.
Another follow-up, sorry.
Sure.
I'd appreciate that. It's my understanding that there actually might be one in Senator Johnson's district, a co-owned building, but I'd appreciate it if you'd find that for me.
Chair Jensen, Senator, Representative Beyer, we can get that information for you. I just can't think of it, anything off the top of my head.
Thank you.
I'd welcome having it, too.
Well, I guess, what building in Senator Johnson's district?
Well, I'm not sure particularly what building. My understanding that maybe when Gary Weeks was at DAS, there had been a building, an agreement entered into. So I'd love to know whether I'm just totally off base or whether that was accurate information.
Okay. Other questions, other discussion on the Eugene office building at this point? One other question I had. I understand the DEQ contract for the space they're in right now expires at the end of the calendar year 08. Is that correct?
Chair Jensen, that is correct.
And are we in a posture or position to complete the renovation in such time that DEQ would be able to get moved into the building by the beginning of the calendar year 09?
Chair Jensen, we are getting close to not being able to make that date.
Time is of the essence, if that's the route we're going, in other words.
That is correct, Chair Jensen.
I understood, if I read the letter thing from Eugene correctly, that they were perhaps able to assist in some way in the relocation of DEQ for some period of time. I don't know what they were specifically talking about with that. If that were to be possible, and DEQ were, being asked then in Eugene to move on two different occasions, to make the initial move out when their lease expires and make another move back when they become the primary tenant of the state's building there, or the state's portion of the building there. What type of costs are we looking at? What additional costs would we be looking at if that were to be made possible?
Chair Jensen, I don't have that on the top of my head. We can get you an estimate of what it would cost.
Okay.
A lot of that has to do with all the information technology hookups and everything else.
Right.
So depending upon the location, that can change. Be a different cost. But we can give you an estimate of what the move would be.
Okay. And then the second move.
Right.
Right. And I was sure there was another question there someplace, but since we'll be talking about it again, if the question reappears, I'll ask it at that time. Yes, please.
One more follow-up, please. Okay, thank you. With regards to the DEQ needing to move, that's driven, and maybe you covered this last time you were here and presented on the subject, but from my memory, that DEQ move is being driven by their lease being up, and has the option been explored of renewing the lease for 1 year in their current facilities?
Chair Jensen, Representative Edwards, two things that enter into this. One, the current office space doesn't particularly work well for DEQ. Second, DEQ is reorganizing, and so they have a shift of personnel, which would coincide with the plan to move into the state office building. And the third thing is, from what has been communicated to my staff, is that the current landlord for DEQ is not willing to extend their lease agreement.
Any other questions on that before we move on? We certainly wish the folks from Lane County to probe this, as understand the chair is open to any of your thoughts, suggestions, ideas that you might have as we proceed on. Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, moving north to Salem again, we have an additional recommendation with respect to the facilities around them, in and around the mall, and this is more looking towards a change in how parking is accommodated or provided. There's about a little over 4,000 stalls around the mall area owned by the state. Some of those are metered and for other purposes, leaving about 3,900 stalls that are leased out or rented out for rent. Of those, a little over 3,000 are all reserved. Our suggestion is that DAS be encouraged to look towards a more private sector model of where you pay more for a private stall, and open stalls then actually end up accommodating more cars, because there are always they have queuing theory, which in parking, so they actually, because people coming and going, compensated absences such as vacations and the like, you actually can accommodate more parking, more people parking, then you have stalls because people are not there. And we, I believe they should be looking towards this as a model when they're considering the Capitol Mall, the red structure, the and the new building. Because of the pressing demand, I believe Mr. Ball talked about out here in Salem that people living near the just north of us having problems because of employees, state employees parking on the streets. And so this, I think, it's a time to maybe start looking at an alternative parking solution to everyone gets a reserved stall. Not a directive, but just in the planning and moving forward, looking at that and seeing what sort of additional parking can be accommodated by going to a different model. With that, Mr. Chair, this, again, we have recommended what this committee doesn't, I don't know where the capital construction bill will be, it's House Bill 5006, but our recommendation, we haven't acted on it yet, would be to propose an amendment to, for whomever's going to consider it, to incorporate these changes into the capital construction bill. And it's only for the Department of Administrative Services structures. The capital construction bill, you have it before you, it involves, it's for any number of different state agencies, the Department of Human Services, Veterans Affairs, State Police, and the like. So that would be our recommendation, and then we could accommodate that in a letter to the co-chairs from the chair of this committee. Our next recommendation is with respect
to Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. Sorry to interrupt you, Dallas. I was wondering, Mr. Ball, if I may, has DAS done any cost-benefit analysis regarding private ownership versus public ownership of the parking and the new proposed parking and so forth? We have sort of a legend around this town already, you know, that that parking is unavailable. I don't know how many constituents over the last the short time that I've been here have called my office and being late for an appointment because they were circling the building looking for a place to put their car. That doesn't really send a very good message to our constituents. Yeah, come up here and testify, but by the way, there's no place to park, you know. And I'm wondering if DAS has done any cost-benefit analysis regarding the capital costs, the management costs, and the timeliness of availability if the private sector could actually put up these garages and have them functioning faster than the state can.
Chair Jensen, Senator Whitsitt, there's about a half a dozen different things that enter my mind when from the question you posed, particularly with putting up parking structures, et cetera. And let's take parking structures first. The first thing that we would have to do is sit down with the City of Salem, because they're the permitting authority as to what is built. And so initially we have to sit down with them and talk about the parking ratio of state employees on the mall area in relation to the parking spaces that are available. Now, there have been agreements with the city as to what that ratio should be. If we put a new building on the yellow lot to house state employees, we will exceed the current threshold of the agreement of employees versus parking spaces. So we would have to renegotiate with the City of Salem as to what available space we have for people to park in around the mall area. And that is brought forth because employees coming to work, state employees coming to work, if there's not adequate parking available for them, then they park in the neighborhoods. And then the neighborhoods become upset over that because it takes parking space away from them where they live. And we must sympathize with them too, I think. Your residential neighborhood, let's say it's a good example that has come out many times at capital planning meetings, a mother with two young children has to park three blocks from her home so she can go back to her home. Those are the kinds of things that you hear from the people in the neighborhoods. And it's real. It's not we're not making anything up here. And so to coordinate that with the city takes a lot of time and energy. Mr. Wyand mentioned going to a private model of parking in on the Capitol Mall. The private model that he's referring to is you do away with all reserved parking on the mall, and it's just a first-come, first-served basis. I can assure you that is a recommendation that has been made, but it will be fraught with a lot of opposition from employees who then have to go search for a parking space, much like the mother with two small children in her neighborhood. So I think those are the kinds of things that we need to come to agreement with, and that's one of the reasons I was so adamant that we have sufficient planning money that we can staff this, enter into some agreements and plans with the city of Salem and state employees, so that when we do build a building, we have those questions answered. The other question I think comes to mind that we should possibly look at too is, should we, because congestion is an issue in this town, should we have mass transit of state employees into the core area of the city rather than allowing people to park down here? In other words, have a parking structure off-site someplace on the edge of the city and bus people in. Those are all things that the city has brought forth as concerns, and if we're going to be a partner in this town with the city, we need to make some plans around those types of issues associated with parking and employees on the mall. Now, to answer the question, have we considered turning all the parking over to a private company in here on the mall area? I'm not aware that we've done that. I'm not aware that we've looked at that. It's all currently state-owned and is run from the parking program in my department.
Follow up.
Then that would mean you probably haven't looked at the. That I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you probably haven't looked at the possibility of private sector building these proposed new parking structures on the state land.
Chair Jensen, Senator Whitsitt, I'm not aware of any review or study that has done that.
Thank you.
Representative Byer.
Thank you. A follow-up to something you said. I know that there is right now parking at the State Motor Pool and transportation back and forth, or at least there has been. Do you have any idea what percentage of people would use that now?
Chair Jensen, Representative Byer, I can't tell you the percentage of people, but the parking lot is typically full out at the Motor Pool where people can mass transit in from there.
Oh, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to move on then to special governmental payments, which is the last recommendation on my memo dated the 20th. And I would also ask you to take a look at the memo dated Friday the 23rd. The two need to work together. And I have attached to the memo of the 23rd a replacement to what would have been page 30 on our work session document to show the impact of our recommendations. Within the special governmental payments, there is $3.75 million to the Oregon Public Broadcasting. We are recommending not approving that package.
Let's take a 2-minute recess.
We are not recommending approval of the payment to the Public Broadcasting Service. The reason for this is for the co-chairs to put it in another bill. historically support for the public broadcasting service has been, and this is the grant, this is the direct grant, this is not the debt service on the lottery bonds that were issued for public broadcasting to change their transmitters from analog to digital. That was provided, I think, in 2001. The grants to public broadcasting historically have been in a separate bill. The funding has been provided to the Department of Administrative Services for payment to Oregon Public Broadcasting. The same held true with grants to the Oregon Historical Society. Separate bills, the appropriations were to the Department of Administrative Services for payment to the Oregon Historical Society. For purposes of transparency that principally, but also to have the dialogue on a separate bill, we are recommending that you not approve it so that the co-chairs, when they're ready to bring it back, put it in another bill or cause one to be drafted. We have, for those of you new to the Ways and Means process, a number of blank bills, if you will, relating to state financial administration that have been introduced and assigned to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, a certain number of House bills and a certain number of Senate bills. And so we are recommending that this $3.75 million not be approved as part of the Department of Administrative Services operating budget, but that it be removed to be brought back in a separate bill at some juncture when the co-chairs are ready.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my concern about this is that we have it in our hands right now, and my concern is letting, for those of us that are interested in seeing funding for OPB occur, and that this has the feeling of letting it slip away from us without a clear answer as to where it is going to reside. I have bills drafted that have not at this point been dropped yet that attempt to make sure that there is a bill in play to catch things like this as well as funding for the Historical Society. It's all part of the CHAMPS program, Culture, Arts, Movies, History and Preservation, and I didn't spell CHAMPS right. But this is part of a cultural package that is moving through. I just want to make sure that we can build the record here that by taking it out of DAS's budget in the name of transparency and sort of setting it loose into the ether, that there is a mechanism with which to capture it again so that we're not missing an opportunity to help restore some public investment in Oregon Public Broadcasting.
Representative Colesio.
Mr. Chair, I'm new to the Ways and Means Committee. I just don't understand how and why we have people come and testify, and it's something that we go through, and then here we are, we're going to make a decision, and we say, well, it needs to go somewhere else. Now, how typical is that? And then my second question is, what signal does it send to the rest of the body that we do this? Or again, is this just something that's very sort of typical?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is not typical. This is the first time that the direct appropriation or the grant, in my knowledge, since I've been here, for the grant for public broadcasting, this is the first time it's resided in an agency's bill. So the purpose of the public testimony was to have it. We have always had the grant for the Oregon Public Broadcasting and Historical Societies presented as part of the governor's budget in separate bills. This session they are not. The Historical Society is included in the Department of Parks and Recreation's budget bill. Oregon Public Broadcasting, for some reason, when the budget came down to the governor's office, was included in the Department of Administrative Services operating budget. So this is not a typical way of dealing with these sorts of things. We have not, we had to respond to your question about, well, why do we have the public testimony, in the event that we didn't have the opportunity in the future. It was in here, so we had the public testimony as part of this budget bill.
Follow-up.
I understand, and I appreciate it. This is the first time that budget was in DAS. My question is, how unusual is it to have something in this process here, let's say in DAS budget, and then it goes out. Regardless of what it is.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Sure. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we have done that before with operations that were included in the Department of Administrative Services budget, and we subsequently moved them elsewhere. And I can tell you three that I was personally involved with. At one time, the Department of Administrative Services had the arrest and return program. Well, that's a gubernatorial responsibility. We took it out of the DAS budget. It came back in the governor's office budget. The governor's natural resource office, policy office advisors, were in the Department of Administrative Services budget. Once again, we took it out of the DAS budget. It came back in the governor's office budget. There was, prior to the economic revitalization team being established in statute, there was a community solutions team, its predecessor, if you will, housed in the Department of Administrative Services. We took that out of there. That reason was less that it didn't belong there so much as it had no statutory support. So we had it removed from the Department of Administrative Services. That subsequently came back when the bill was passed to establish the Economic Revitalization Team as part of the governor's office. So it came back in another budget. This isn't the first time we've taken something out to have it returned.
Thank you.
I think if I could follow just a little bit on that, Representative, that the 426 is just kind of an illustration of this in the reverse of that, where part of this budget was put in another budget for another agency before we moved this out. Had we put this for some reason on a faster track, then it would have been the chair's position to have taken that section relating to the OEBB board out of our budget and put it over to the Department of Education, sort of thing. So I think there's some frequency of some use of this. The we got half a dozen people want to talk, so the chair better shut up and listen. Representative Beyer first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I share Senator Johnson's concerns to just kind of let this go. I thought it was very refreshing to actually see it here in the first place. And I think that the for me and most of us, well, a lot of us on this committee, it's not a problem. We live in an area that's going to get this service anyway, but there is, I think there is an infrastructure piece here that I think is pretty important for the rest of the state, and I really would hate to see us lose that and juggling it around. So that's where my concern is.
Thank you, Representative. Senator Johnson?
I think the thing that is of concern is that in the scenario that you described, there's a put and a take. This is just the take. There's no put. And I think that's the worrisome piece of this. It just floats out into the ether, and if in the discretion of the co-chairs it doesn't reappear someplace, we maybe have a problem. And so that's why I went ahead and prepared bills that have elements of all of the CHAMPS package in them, particularly OPB and OHS, Oregon Historical Society. But I just want to reemphasize the fact that the agreement that was made with the arts community is that that package stays together. And my concern is in creating a separate OPB vehicle, for example, I don't want OPB to move forward and leave the other constituent elements behind. And that would be the film and video, the historic preservation, the Oregon Historical Society, the Arts Commission. And so there was some reticence on my part to put the bill into the system because it would be very easy to lose the other elements. I'm very concerned that if we pull this out, that it relies on the goodwill of others to make sure that we get another shot at it. And that's my concern, and I just want to at least lay down the record that I think that is a meritorious concern.
Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. one of my concerns has been developing over the last several years is that we send out grants, but then we really don't pay much attention to how those grants are actually, how that money is spent. It's like, here, go forth and do good things. And I would like to see, a spreadsheet of employee compensation, including OPE, for these, the Historical Society and the Oregon Public Broadcasting, and also where the funding for those salaries come from, whether it's 25% from state, 25% from county, wherever. I'd like to see that transparency so that we know how that money is being spent and on whom.
Senator Johnson.
Just a comment. I asked exactly the same question because OPB, and I brought this up in their testimony, conveniently forgets in their public testimony that we gave them $7 million for capital construction of towers. And the question really boils down to, did the towers get built or didn't they? And that's the performance measure. And in the case of OPB, the towers got built or are in the process of being built right now. I think that it is a very valid concern across all of our budgeting. When you see the amount of money that goes to the Commission on Children and Families, much of it re-granted out to other agencies, I think it's completely appropriate to ask how efficaciously that money is applied and what are we buying for the money that goes through. I just make the point, in the case of the towers for OPB, it's pretty simple. Steel go up, steel not go up. I can tell you that in the rest of this CHAMPS package, the money for Oregon Historical Society, for example, is not applied to salaries at all. It's applied to the curatorial function of taking care of the physical treasures of the state of Oregon. And the question there is pretty simple. Did the photographs get taken care of appropriately with all the right paper and all the right acid? This is not meant to build personnel infrastructure. It's meant to actually have deliverables. But I think your question in the main is exactly the question that we ought to be asking, whether we're giving the money to counties or whether it's passing through a big agency to private not-for-profits. Are we getting the deliverables? Let me just give you one other case in point that touches me very personally. I came into this process at the beginning of the Lewis and Clark exposition, asking the e-board to authorize money to pay a piece of the Lewis and Clark Explorer train. And I made the representation that we could operate that train for 3 years safely and return the money to the state that we borrowed for the startup costs. That happened. But I've never been asked in a formal setting anywhere, did you keep your word to your colleagues and to the legislative process that the money that came out of what you euphemistically called the lawnmower fund actually was returned? I'm delighted to say it was, but nobody ever asked me in any kind of a formal way. I'll explain that, the lawnmower fund to you later. But nobody ever asked in any formal way, was there an accounting at the end of this process that certified that the train finished in the black, the money was returned, God's in heaven and all's right with the world. And I think that that might be something that we as a legislature should give some thoughtful consideration to.
I share both Senator Johnson and Representative Beyer and I suspect other members of the committee's concern that when this starts floating around out there in cyberspace or something, whether or not we're going to have a hook on it that we can get it back into the building is always a concern to me. And having the good fortune to be able to live with a lady that is absolutely addicted to OPB, I must say that the chair will do everything in his power to get it back in if it floats out there. But I'm not sure exactly where we want to go on this particular agenda item yet, so let's reserve that for when we start talking about it. And I think we are out of time, and I would like to talk to my friend from the Senate side for a moment before he, after banging the gavel down, but if you have any words of wisdom for us, we'd be happy to listen to those on the record.
Doc Bates is stuck in traffic. He appreciates the use of your car. He made it out of the snow and was nearing Roseburg the last time I talked to him. He explained to me conversations that he had with a number of you and told me he thought things were fine. So I just wanted to say that.
I think that's what I wanted to talk to you about. I
had not talked with him before I came down the first time.
That's great, and I do appreciate that. And I'm sorry to have you sit through testimony.
This is wonderful. I love it. I was on this committee last time. Thank you.
Okay. We didn't quite get through with all of this. We should be ready to start taking some votes next time. We will have a couple of discussion items before we get there. If the Eugene folks and the Eugene building have any more thoughts, any ideas, the chair would certainly entertain them. With that, we are adjourned.